I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to continue our community conversation about the importance of education. American Graduate is an initiative of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and many partners, including WFYI, to help young people along the path to graduation and satisfying lives. Today, we will talk about the Arts and Young People and the Any Given Child program. My guests are Ernest Disney Britton with the Arts Council of Indianapolis and David Newman of the Indianapolis Public Schools. To join the conversation, please call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about arts education and funding for Indianapolis school children, part of a new initiative called Any Given Child. My guests are Ernest Disney Britton, who is director of grant services and arts education for the Arts Council of Indianapolis, and David Newman of the Indianapolis Public Schools, whose portfolio, it seems, includes overseeing almost all art programs and also is on the community arts team. Welcome to both of you.
Hello. I'm glad to be here.
Thanks, John.
And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. And I should say to our listeners, if you want to join this important conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. And I also should emphasize that this is part of our continuing conversation called American Graduate. That's an initiative by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and its many stations, including WFYI, to use the power of public television and radio to encourage young people on the path to graduation and satisfying lives. Okay, so having gotten that preamble out of the way, talk to me a little bit. I'll start with you, Ernest, about what Any Given Child is. I'm going to start with the specifics, the hook here, and then I would like to talk really about the state of arts education and arts funding here in Indiana and really across the nation.
Sure. Ernest. Well, let me say that I'm thrilled to be here, and the Arts Council is exceptionally excited and proud to be a partner with Indianapolis Public Schools and working with the Kennedy Center. The Kennedy Center has really, they have about 30 years experience in terms of working with municipalities and school districts. And they developed this program called Ensuring the Arts for Any Given Child as a way of extending their strengths in terms of working with municipalities so that every school district within the United States will be able to guarantee that every child K through 8 has exceptional arts education access. And so they select a handful of typically two. This year they actually selected four cities to work with. And they come here and work with us every month, and there is a team, a collective impact team from across the city that is working together to collect information. And we work in partnership with the Kennedy Center to really take a snapshot of where we are and then to start planning for where we want to be in the future.
David, in practical terms, what does this mean for the students, say, of IPS?
Well, it just ensures that we have equitable opportunities in the arts throughout the district. One of our big concerns is we don't have an opportunity for every child in every school to receive a quality arts education because some schools can't offer what other schools can through magnet programs, through K-8 configurations, through Montessori options. So this initiative will help us bring fine arts opportunities to all of our students and also some that have been lacking in most of the buildings. We're looking to expand with dance, theater, poetry, readings, that sort of thing, other than just the usual ones that we have, which is music and art. So this is an initiative to bring all of those opportunities to all of our students.
And how will that take shape? I'm going to stay with you, David, but in terms of how it will manifest itself, just pick one of the schools in IPS that will be most dramatically affected by this.
Yeah, I would think that at the end of this initiative, we can see schools that are typically K-6 or K-8 schools that are typically in our hardest hit areas that don't have magnet options. Those schools that only offer general music K-6 in those grades, or visual art K-6, and don't have the opportunity for expansive field trips to go to other places to see the opportunities that some of these other buildings have. So probably our typical K-6 elementary school will see the most impact.
And how will, I'm going to stay with you for just a second longer, mm-hmm. and then I'm going to bring it back to Ernest to put it in a somewhat larger perspective. In terms of what will you do to expand those options, can you walk me through how it will change, say, an IPS school child's day?
Well, it is our hope that an IPS school child's day will have arts infused into the regular classroom. Art opportunities will be part of the regular curriculum for any given child. So that's kind of the prime directive of the initiative of the Kennedy Center, is that arts are not add-on activities, that arts are infused into the normal curriculum with expansive opportunities through the network of our arts community councils, mm-hmm. and all of our arts community organizations that will be able to offer more things in the building as opposed to just traveling on field trips and those sorts of things.
We are talking about arts education and funding for Indianapolis school children today on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Ernest, so in some ways, if it's going to become much more the daily experience for students and have the arts infused into the classroom, is that going to require more training for teachers in arts?
We certainly believe so. This first year is all about assessment, and so we don't know concretely exactly what's going to be the impact in terms of change here in mm-hmm. Indianapolis. What we do know is what has happened through the facilitation of the Kennedy Center from across the country. For instance, Sacramento, which is the oldest city in any given child program, saw that when they began the program 8 years ago, I believe, 17% of the students had access to arts education. Today, through this program, it's 100%. We also know that in Austin, Texas, 9 full-time teachers were brought in and $3 million in additional support was brought in from within the school system, but also from outside services. Portland, Oregon, 24 new art teachers, and then there was so much public support that they actually passed a new tax levy just to support arts and arts education. Tulsa, Oklahoma, saw an increase of $1 million in arts education. So every city, what happens is that there is this goal of 100% in terms of access, and that will transform what is happening in terms of the lives of the teachers, but also the students and also the parents. But we don't know for sure what that looks like here in Indianapolis yet, because we're in phase one of a 5-year process.
And what sorts of things will you be assessing? I mean, what are you looking for in the assessment process?
Well, and I'll give you an example of what we did last month. So during the October, November, and then towards the beginning of December, we took an assessment of what are arts organizations and cultural institutions, who are they partnering with in terms of Indianapolis Public Schools, but also the mayor's charter schools? This is a partnership between the mayor's office, the Arts Council, the arts community, and also IPS to ensure that kind of access. And so the charter schools are also considered part of that public school ecosystem. And then the next 3 months, we'll be focusing in on doing an assessment of what teachers and principals are finding in terms of arts education and what's happening in the classroom. One of the questions as part of that survey is, how are you currently using the arts to teach things like math, to teach history? How are you using the arts to actually teach those sort of core disciplines, but using music and dance and all of those things to infuse it and bring it to life in a new way?
How are we defining? I've been remiss here in not asking this question. How are we defining arts education here? What do we mean when we say that? I'm going to give each of you a crack at that. I'll start with Ernest and then go to Dave.
Well, I'll tell you that for the Arts Council and for the Kennedy Center, we're looking at arts education as the way that during the classroom experience, basically 8 to 5, that teachers are using the arts to teach core skills.
Okay, so it's using the arts, not just art for its own sake, but also to help deliver social studies or other parts of the humanities.
Okay. Science skills, math skills, in addition to let's sing. Yeah.
Okay.
And
Dave.
Yes, and we would just want to emphasize that it's not an add-on part of the curriculum, that it actually is used to support all of the core curricular studies. So not just field trips, extras, special areas is what commonly refer to the fine arts classes as special area classes, especially in K-8 buildings. But it is actually being taught alongside and used with in their core curriculum.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about arts education and funding. There's a new initiative called Any Given Child here in Indianapolis. And that's what we are talking about. If you'd like to join this conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, how much of this, and I'm going to start with Dave on this one because obviously he is the educator, and that is how much of this is a product of the fact that, you know, we have lived in an era in which educational budgets have gotten tighter and tighter. And, that, you know, I notice you keep coming back to that. We don't want to see the arts as something extra. Some of that is obviously a deeply held conviction, but some of it also is somewhat pragmatic because it's the extra stuff that tends to get cut.
Yes.
when the scalpels come out. So how much of this has to be a product of the fact that that arts funding has faced cuts in really the past couple of decades, if not longer?
Yes, and that has been a concern. And in some districts in the state of Indiana, fine arts have been completely cut. We have instructors come to IPS that came down here because their jobs were eliminated. So, yes, that and it's always been a concern. It's a concern of the Indianapolis Public Schools because funding has been drastically cut, and not just in the arts but across the board. So thinking about arts instruction in a whole new way is what we need to do to keep arts instruction viable in education, and making sure that we use the strategies that fine arts teaches us to support language arts, math, social studies, and science in our school buildings. I do a lot of professional development on making sure that we're using our fine arts strategies and language arts and math strategies in our music and art classrooms. So It's kind of a trade-off. We want to make sure that fine arts are viable, because it's such a valuable part of our education of the whole child.
How long have you been involved in arts education, David?
I am an IPS product.
Okay.
I've been working for IPS for 28 years now, and I was a music teacher, and now do this, do the support for fine arts. So it's been pretty much my passion in my whole life.
And real quickly, and about what's happened in those 28 years? That's almost to arts funding, basically, for education. What's happened to your budget?
It's been drastically cut. When I was a teacher and a department head at the high school level, we had budgets, had capital improvement budgets. We have nothing like that. Teachers don't even have reimbursements for the out-of-pocket expenses that they have now.
We are talking about arts education and funding for Indianapolis school children. My guests are Ernest Disney Britton, who is with the Arts Council of Indianapolis, and David Newman of the Indianapolis Public Schools. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about arts education and funding for Indianapolis school children, part of an initiative called Any Given Child that is the brainchild, really, of the Kennedy Center and assorted partners across the land. My guests are Ernest Disney Britton, who's Director of Grants, Services, and Arts Education for the Arts Council of Indianapolis, and David Newman, who is the arts guru for the Indianapolis Public Schools. I think that's a better title, actually,
like
than
that.
Your official one. Get new business cards. And I should say that this conversation is part of our ongoing conversation, our ongoing community conversation, called American Graduate, about the importance of graduation and putting young people on the paths to graduation and to successful lives. It is a partnership of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and many public broadcasting stations, including WFYI. Well, we've been talking really about the state of arts funding, and I've noticed that that seems to have prompted some interest on the part of our audience, so I'm going to take a call from Michael. Michael, how are you?
Very well, sir. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing well, thanks. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I'm calling because I've worked for many years as an artist in residence. I worked in Cincinnati quite a bit when we had some crossover with the Kennedy Center back in the, I guess, mid-90s through a group called Art Links, which is an awesome model. And then I worked as one of the founding artists for Uptown Arts through the Rosenthal Foundation. As a local artist, I'm, you know, interested in getting back into the residency program. And unfortunately, Indianapolis has, to some degree, been a little limited on what they're able to support as far as public sculpture and larger projects using multiple students and multiple schools. So I was wondering if the panel could address opportunities or directions for grant funding for individual artists who seek to add to the pool.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Michael. I'll start with you on that one, Ernest.
So the individual artists can certainly partner with arts organizations here in Indianapolis. Our annual grants program is really based on receiving funding for four specific areas: strengthening administration, marketing, but also arts education, and then their artistic program. And so individual artists can certainly partner with those organizations. Big Car would be an example of one. There are also plans for that are under discussion for some very new and exciting public art initiatives that should be coming our way in the coming year.
We've also gotten an email from a listener named Sarah. If you'd like to reach out to us via email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can call us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Sarah asks, why only K-8 kids? And what kind of arts are you talking about? David, I'll start with you, but Ernest, I think you probably want to get a shot at that one, too.
Well, maybe I can preface that and see if I know what the okay. what the Kennedy Foundation has for the grant application. For the grant that we applied for, or the Indy Arts Council applied for, the stipulation is that it primarily is for K-8 students in a public school arena. So that was one of the requirements of the grant.
Mm-hmm. Why was the focus limited to K-8?
So the
at the foundation level or the grant making level.
So the Kennedy Center actually chose K-8 because that is the point in a child's education where you're going to make the greatest impact in terms of what is going to continue into high school. Mm-hmm. And so they, in their work for, again, 30 mm-hmm. years and working with municipalities around the country, have found that K-8 is the ideal sweet spot in mm-hmm. terms of infusing a child's arts education so that they can continue to have an interest and a passion for that as it goes into high school, junior high and high school.
And the other part, what kind of arts are we talking about here? What sort of arts are we going to focus on? Is there a limit or a definition, Ernest?
No, there is no limit. We are, in terms of our surveys, we are looking, as David mentioned, what right now is the access in terms of dance and music and fine arts and music. I know that one of the things that the Superintendent Farabee said, that when he spent his first year here and he was walking around and he was talking to parents, mm-hmm. he said over and over he kept hearing from parents saying, we want more arts mm-hmm. infused into the classroom and in our schools. And so he was very excited about talking to us about the possibilities of how the arts community can work to help expand those opportunities for students.
David, you know, as someone who deals with this on a daily basis, where do you think the greatest need is? I mean, where's the biggest gap in your arts education curriculum?
Well, it would be addressing theater opportunities, live theater, and dance or kinesthetic opportunities. It really, whatever the community action team has charged itself with and the focus that we'll be working on this year will be the direction that we go with that in our planning phase this year, will be in our implementation phase. So really, our arts across the board will be looked at, will be decided where we need more emphasis. So there's really no which particular kinds, but all avenues.
And is that, I know we're focused for the grant purposes on K-8, but it struck me as someone who's been around here for a long time, many of those of the Indianapolis high schools have these absolutely gorgeous stages. Does that mean that, you know, those have been pretty much fallow until something like this comes along?
Well,
David, I know Ernest wants to get to that one too. Yeah,
we utilize what we can. I would like to just interject a story.
Please.
When I started teaching at Northwest High School in 1988, the band director had a concert in the 1,200 seat auditorium, and there were folding chairs set up on one side of the stage and folding chairs on the other side of the stage facing each other. And this was my first week of school, and so I said, it's a beautiful auditorium. What are these chairs over here for? This is where the band's going to sit. What are these chairs for? He said, well, that's where the audience is going to sit. So we were down to utilizing our 1,200-seat auditorium for about 30 people and not even using the auditorium. So that's not to say that we don't use our auditoriums, Short Ridge, Broad Ripple. Many of those high schools have many programs. We brought the U.S. Air Force Band here last year. And so they are beautiful facilities, and they do need to be utilized.
Ernest.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to say a couple of things.
Sure.
One is that I want to build on the conversation where we were just mentioning about the different disciplines, and mention that learning students who learn to read music, mm-hmm. that helps to address dyslexia. Those who were involved in painting pictures helps to address autism. Dancing helps with motor skills. Acting which you pointed out in terms of theater, really helps with speech impediments. And one of those strong factors in terms of building a stronger community is that those students who are involved in the arts are also much more likely to be involved and engaged with racial differences. And so they're open to working with other people. But one of the things that has really been exciting for the start of this conversation has been the number of individual arts organizations who have begun new conversations with schools about actually finding a home in that school, whether or not it is a performance venue or an office venue. We have spaces in our schools who are and they're seeking partners, and we have arts organizations that are seeking locations and partners. And so this has begun a whole new conversation. I think that often we think in terms of the what's wrong. I think what we're entering is this whole new era in which there are all these new exciting possibilities. IPS is very excited about experimenting in new ways in which we can really increase the graduation rates and the attendance rates of students. And they're really looking at the arts as one of the ways that they can increase achievement for their schools. Going to your point earlier about graduation rates, and we'll see more and more of those partnerships. And I'm very excited about the arts community has always been interested in experimentation, and now we have a really strong partner to make that happen.
We are talking about arts education and funding for Indianapolis school children here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. So I'm going to ask this, and it may not be a particularly politic question, but does it bother you? I mean, I can tell listening to both of you, you're really, really passionate about the arts and committed to it. But the arguments at some level that you have to advance here for increased arts funding are that art for its own sake isn't enough. It's got to be a path to better understanding other disciplines. You know, we wouldn't dream of arguing, oh, you should study science so that you can understand, you know, or physics or whatever, so that you can understand how a statue works or something like that, that the arts have to be a path to understanding of other things, that they have to take sort of a supporting role. Does that bother you at all that you can't just say, you know, the arts are important? It's just that simple. Ernest, I'm going to start with you.
I would say that those examples that you just gave in terms of science, I think that you really do need to learn science because it will help the greater good. Mm-hmm. I think you need to learn history because it will help you to understand how we have worked together historically as a people and as a world. And the arts are one of those ways that we can gain that greater understanding. And so I don't think that any of those are just – you don't learn science just because science has nothing to do with the world. Yeah. It's just science for science's sake. It's really about science because I want to change the world. And so I think in the same way in terms of the arts, there was certainly a trend back in the 50s and 60s where it was more about arts for art's sake. But I really think we have gotten back to the way that the arts originally were intended. They were about building family, building community, strengthening our understanding of ourselves and our own identity. And we're getting back to where the arts actually began.
David Sadley, I'm going to make the question a little more pointed for you. Okay. Which is, does it bother you as an arts teacher that at some level that arts education is presented in a supporting or subordinate role to other disciplines?
Surely. You know, sometimes you take it personally. Sometimes early in my music career, I thought I need to constantly justify my existence as to what I am teaching. But that's part of this, a whole new initiative, is that we want to create a mindset. And I think Dr. Hockman at Butler University was talking about this recently, that you want to create a mindset for the arts that is not a supportive role. You know, historically speaking, in all the great cultures, arts and culture and communication and literature and science, math have all been partners in all of the ancient cultures. And what makes this country great is our commitment to all of those things in making the child the whole child. So, yes, we take it kind of personally. So I guess it's something that we have to keep constantly talking about. Otherwise, we'll go away. But I do want to say that in the 3 years that I've been doing this job, I have discovered that the Indianapolis community and the Central Indiana arts community are so helpful, are so viable, they're so energetic, and want to go out of their way to do whatever they can for our children. And it's been, the outcry has been tremendous. And the once we got this Kennedy grant for the city of Indianapolis, we had Ernest's phone was ringing off the hook about other people that wanted to be involved. So, you know, it's a great feeling knowing that you live in a city and in an area where the arts are very valued.
We are talking about arts education and funding here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, as a listener named Mr. Blair has done, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Mr. Blair, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Doing fine. What's on your mind?
Well, I think a little bit about Kurt Vonnegut and some of his comments about our city and the arts. And I've been a educator working in about every school system for the last 25 years, and some days being very admired for my poetry and my personality, and sometimes not so revered. Very familiar, well, somewhat familiar with poetry. In the 60s and the 70s, there was a powerful movement that accidentally I've propelled, inspiring kids today and kids every day to write. A little bit out of the box, not calling it even poetry and not even really calling it the arts. For me, it sustained me for 25 years and inspired thousands and thousands of kids. Knowing, one, that sometimes artists aren't good at navigating this infrastructural dilemma to get in to the schools, and that poetry was such a movement and still is butter on these kids' bread. What are you guys doing to empower writing or creative writing and bringing in some of the, you know, some of the out of the box people? Because I teach kids or inspire kids to write, and there's no kid that can't write and can't integrate every social, cultural, theological piece of curriculum into their writing. It's only natural, and I see a void, and the reason I bring up Vonnegut is because it seems like through his critique of this city, it's not, and I may be wrong, but I got the view he felt it was not so culturally and artistically rich, but very hungry.
Mr. Blair, let me
love your comments on...
Yeah, let me... We're getting ready to come to a break, and I want to give them a chance to comment before we get there. But thank you very much for the call and the question.
Thank you.
Certainly. Well, David, I'll start with you on that one.
Well, I just think he makes a valid point, and that's poetry and creative writing is something that the community action team is definitely including, looking at, finding out where our gaps are in that aspect of the art world as well. So, you know, we're not wanting to use the old adage that fine arts is music and art. It is all of those things and thinking about things in a creative way. So we'll be thinking about that as we go through this planning process.
We're talking about arts education and funding as part of our ongoing American Graduate Conversation here on No Limits. My guests are Ernest Disney Britton, who is the Director of Grant Services and Arts Education for the Arts Council of Indianapolis, and David Newman of Indianapolis Public Schools, who is the arts guru there. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about arts education and funding for Indianapolis school children. It's part of a conversation about Any Given Child, an initiative of the Kennedy Center and many partners across the nation, including IPS and the Arts Council of Indianapolis. My guests are Ernest Disney Britton, who is Director of Grant Services and Arts Education for the Arts Council of Indianapolis, and David Newman, who is the arts guru for the Indianapolis Public Schools. And I should say that this conversation is part of our ongoing community conversation called American Graduate, which emphasizes the importance of putting young people on the path to graduation and satisfying lives. It is an initiative of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and its many affiliate and partner stations, including WFYI. Well, just before the break, we were talking about sort of the relevance and having to justify arts education. We've gotten a question from a listener, email question. If you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Listener named Adam, I think, frames the question much better than I did. And he says, as an artist myself, I realize that the question often asked is, why do the arts deserve such support when it's math and science that lead to jobs? Could the panel speak to the economic activity that is derived from the arts? Ernest, mm-hmm. I'll let you go there first.
I will mention that according to Americans for the Arts, which is our parent organization, there's jobs in the arts industry are set to increase by 16% over the next 20 years. And tied to that also, there was a survey several years ago in terms of the top CEOs in the country that the kinds of people that they were looking for were people who had high levels of creativity. Where do you get high levels of creativity? By being involved in the arts. And so economic development and job opportunities directly tied to being involved in the arts. And communities that are moving forward on that, like Indianapolis, are going to be far more competitive in that jobs market in the future.
That is still a fairly utilitarian argument. I guess maybe because Mr. Blair invoked his name. I'm thinking of a conversation I had once with Kurt Vonnegut, who was a friend of mine. And, you know, he said, you really don't do the arts to make money because there's just not enough money in it, ultimately. He says, the only reason to do an art is because it feeds your soul. And I guess that's the question and the subject I have been trying to get at here is,
But I think that there's this key distinction between those who are – what we're talking about in terms of Any Given Child is ensuring the access to every child and not just those children who want to be a professional in terms of dance or be a professional writer. Certainly we want to give increased opportunities for those to excel, and that's really an ideal opportunity in terms of the magnets. We're talking about those students like Trina Vargas, who wanted to be a lawyer, but every day that she was faced with getting up and going to school, she didn't want to get up and go to school, except that there was music class waiting for her. And so those are the kinds of students that we're talking about also.
We are talking about arts education and funding here in Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Terry, welcome to the program.
Yes, I'm a longtime educator, and my question is, when will the educational schools, IPS, the donut schools, recognize useful application of the arts with core curriculum. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is when I taught the project, I was project-based. Mm-hmm. And projects bring kids to school. They keep them interested. They learn all the core plus organization. Are you looking at introducing the arts in an all-encompassing way?
We'll try to get an answer for you. Thanks very much for the call and the question, Terry. David.
Yeah, that is exactly the kind of thinking that we're promoting and that the Kennedy Center wants to try to have with this opportunity. I'm just thinking about Indianapolis, and they're building the new Cummins building down here. And Cummins is a very forward-thinking organization, and they're very successful. And they're successful because they hire people who know how to think creatively, know how to think outside the box, and they are project-oriented, like Terry was saying. They work in groups. They work together. They're not isolated. They solve problems that require many different ways of thinking about those problems. So those are the kinds of opportunities and the kind of mind, that is the kind of mindset that we want to promote with this new initiative.
Ernest, I'm going to ask real quickly, with the initiative, what constitutes success for the initiative? How are you going to measure whether it's worked or not?
So I think that the statistical answer would be 100% in terms of access.
Okay.
I think that there are other things that we'll be able to measure longer term. We know that that students who perform or who are involved in the arts actually scored 91 points higher on SATs and those kinds of things. We will be determining those measures later in the process. Mm-hmm. But right now we're thinking in terms of we're going to measure what access is right now. Mm-hmm. With the end goal and desire of reaching 100%.
We are talking about the arts and arts funding here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Excellent program, gentlemen.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
The question that I have, and maybe I'm off base on this, but it seems that sports are such an integral part of our society, especially in a city like Indianapolis. The Hoosier Dome, we had to pay for. It wasn't good enough, so we had to build a brand new stadium for a very rich owner. And it seems all the money seems to be going to sports. And I'm wondering if the arts are being shortchanged literally because of this overemphasis on sporting events. If your kid goes out for football, he's a hero. If he goes out for the band or he's on the theater, not so much. And it really is frustrating to me just to see the financial inequities in this.
I think, Jim, you've been preaching to the choir with David here.
Yeah, but
he was nodding his head in affirmation. Thank you very much for the call and the question.
What I would like to tell Jim is that the reality with Indianapolis Public Schools is our athletic programs are in the same state of monetary disarray as our arts programming. So I know that, like somebody said, the donut areas, I can't speak for those, but I know that Indianapolis Public Schools, our athletic funding is low as well. So we seem to all be in the same boat in that category.
I mean, I'll throw it to the Arts Council then. Because we do throw an awful lot of civic attention, and we invest pretty heavily in building a sports culture here. I think on a dollar-for-dollar basis, you can't make an argument that we invest equally in the arts here.
I don't have a response in terms of equality in terms mm-hmm. of that, but I do know in terms of individuals that there have been that. Certainly the ways that we have talked with arts organizations working with the Colts, for instance. I know several arts organizations that actually perform during Colts games. Mm-hmm. I know arts organizations who were involved with the Speedway. in terms of celebrating that 100th year. I think that what we're seeing is a new opportunity of looking at alliances and partnerships. And so it's not that the arts versus sports, it is all of them together. And how do we work together to build a stronger community and more vibrant community? Certainly there are going to be some people who are always more interested in sports than they are in dance or the arts. But what makes a strong community is a collection of people who are involved in all of those things.
Joe, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to say that, first of all, for many, many years, I was employed by the Lyric Opera of Chicago. And during those years, among other duties that I had, was an obligation I felt in justifying why opera was important. And in itself and in the bigger picture of the arts. And it occurred to me down through the years that art, whether it be opera or any other form of art, can survive almost anything. It can survive war, famine, poverty, you name it. In fact, the arts very often feed on those very things and their opposites, fortunately. But one thing that the arts cannot survive and will kill them off instantly is an indifferent public. If the public is indifferent to the significance of any of the arts, the art goes no farther and it is dead. And so therefore, education of the public generation after generation after generation has to continue so that the public is never indifferent to it. You may not like grand opera. You may not like the literature of Kurt Vonnegut or anyone else, but you may still understand the importance and significance of it.
That's
about it.
Thanks very much for the call, Joe. Do you have a comment other than an amen, Dave?
Well, I just want to agree with him on that, on that point. Look at, I just, as an example, looks what's happened in public school to, well, when I was growing up, it was home ec and shop, all right? Home ec and shop classes, and then we got a little more politically correct, and we started calling them family and consumer science and industrial technology. But Joe's right. The indifference towards those programs, when there was there an outcry when people started cutting those programs? My answer, it would be no, I didn't hear of any. And now, Indianapolis Public Schools has a handful of family and consumer science teachers. The programs have all but disappeared, and programs have all but disappeared throughout the state as well. So, yeah, indifference towards discipline will cause it to disappear. So that's why we want to make sure that arts education is always at the forefront of thinking and finding new and creative ways of instilling art education into core curriculum so that it will live on.
Gotten an email from a listener named Nora. If you want to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Nora says, all the comments made by today's panel about secondary benefits of arts education are valid. Vocal music, for example, does offer math, language, history, basic brain development benefits, and more. There is one aspect of arts education, however, which is uniquely important. It is where we learn cooperative behavior. Think about it. Math, language, arts, science, you name it, reward individual effort. But in the real world, human beings must also be effective in cooperative environments. Only sports and the performing arts bring that dimension to a child's education. David.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. In my time with IPS, at both teaching ensembles and being in ensembles, you learn early how to be an effective part of a group. Choral music, for example, there are some people whose voices stick out, and they're solo voices, but they have to learn how to blend and how to be part of a group and how to get along with that group and how to make sure that the one is not any more important than the whole. And like I was saying earlier about the way industry and business is nowadays, it's not you sitting in a cubicle by yourself so much or on an assembly line. It is, it's a group-based, project-oriented business. And growing up and being involved in ensembles and music groups of that sort, that just lends itself to helping out. You learn all of those group aspects.
We've got a lot of phone calls, and we're getting tight on time, so I'm going to ask our listeners to be concise in their questions. Richard, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I've listened to this with great interest, but I wonder, how does all of this fit in with the requirements to meet the ICEP standards? Teachers teach for the ICEP, and there have been science programs cut, field trips cut because of teaching for the ICEP. So how is this going to fit in?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Richard.
Richard, we're hoping that with the mindset that this initiative may instill, the fact that the arts will be part of the curriculum and the way teachers teach, so that these creative ways of thinking can just be instilled in our curricular, our core curriculum, so that students have different ways of looking at things.
Is this, is this initiative enough? Does it redress? I mean, you've talked about how drastically everything has been cut over the years that you've been in arts education. Is it enough? Is more needed? What would be needed to get us where we need to be?
We don't think it's enough, but it's a wonderful start. And having this opportunity to work with the Kennedy Foundation and their vast network of cities that they are creating every year will just give us more ideas and ways of looking at things.
Well, if we were to do more, what should we be doing as a society?
Well, I just think the whole mindset of the arts are equal as important as all the other disciplines, and that it's not a special area or it's not an add-on, but it is a way of looking at your problem in a different way.
So, in concrete terms, in terms of funding, should arts education be part of the core curriculum?
No, most definitely. And that would take funding for teacher professional development in our universities, mm-hmm. in the way we go about instructing our future teachers to deliver curriculum.
Well, and I think that probably will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Ernest Disney Britton. He is the Director of Grant Services and Arts Education for the Arts Council of Indianapolis, and David Newman of the Indianapolis Public Schools. He's the arts guru who oversees almost everything there. I thank both of them. I've enjoyed talking with both of you, and I also would like to thank our listeners. I know we had more questions than we had time to get to. This is not the end of the conversation. It is but the beginning. We are going to continue talking about the importance of arts and arts education and education in general on this program. Also would invite our listeners to come back on Thursday when we're going to talk about a new way to evaluate and work with troubled children who have run afoul of the law. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.